Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
Goodbye, Moto.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Motorola has announced plans this morning to spin off its ailing mobile phone handset business. The move will create two separate publicly traded companies. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more.
Motorola will separate its mobile devices unit from broadband and other products. Last year, the company lost its number two spot in the handset business to Samsung after it failed to recreate the success of its popular Razr phone. In a conference call this morning with analysts, CEO Greg Brown said the split would give each company more flexibility and more attention from management.
I believe strongly with these efforts, along with our brand, our people, and our intellectual property, mobile devices, will be well positioned to regain a leadership position as a focused, independent company.
It's not clear if the move will silence frustrated investors who've watched Motorola's stock price plunge as it's lost market share. This week, one of those investors, Carl Icahn, sued the company. He wants Motorola to hand over documents related to the board's handling of the mobile devices business. When asked this morning if Icahn's camp had been consulted about the spinoff, Brown declined to answer. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Breaking up is hard to do, but it's a little easier when you throw in more than $2 billion. Jaguar and Land Rover are speeding away from owner Ford Motor Company into the arms of India's Tata Motors for about $2.3 billion in cash. The companies say today it's finally a done deal. From the not-so-cheery numbers desk, today's durable goods report. This report measures new orders for long-lasting, good old made-in-the-USA manufactured goods. And it turns out orders unexpectedly fell nearly 2% last month. So when you add this durable goods number to yesterday's consumer confidence number, the lowest in 5 years, it adds up to a rocky mood on Wall Street this morning. The Dow is down 109 points to 12,422. The Nasdaq is down 22 points to 2318. And the S&P 500 also down 11 points to 1341. The poor showing for durable goods this morning means you're going to hear analysts speculating all over the place about yet another Fed cut. There is some evidence today that Ben Bernanke's slashing is making a difference. Applications for new mortgages jumped by nearly 50% last week, though the bulk of that came from people looking to refinance. Business software giant Oracle reports third-quarter earnings after the closing bell today. Analysts are bullish on the company. What Oracle reports in its earnings could have a cascading effect on the market. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli explains why.
Call it a bellwether or harbinger, or just call it an oracle. What happens to the software giant is seen as an economic indicator.
Oracle is a real window on the current status of corporate spending, particularly as it applies to the technology business.
That's tech editor Eric Savitz of Barron's. He says if companies aren't buying Oracle software, that's got implications for others in the tech sector and beyond.
It would be a bad sign for all the other hardware and software companies that are providers to the corporate IT world.
No matter what Oracle's news is today, Dan Burrows of Smart Money says everyone will be looking for clues in the quarterly report.
It's the kind of thing you really hope that, you know, Oracle comes out and hits their numbers and doesn't say anything too pessimistic that's going to really, really spook tech investors.
Early reports show analysts weighing in on the optimistic side. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for March 26th on marketplace.org. Talk to the experts and you'll hear it's never too early to start investing. But talk to some young people and you realize they may not have gotten that message. Enter Thrasher, aimed at people who know the best place to spend a Saturday night, but not necessarily where to invest their money. More from Elisa Roth.
When dozens of New York's hippest crowded into a trendy clothing store on a cold Thursday night, it wasn't to check out the latest in high heels or wrap dresses. It was to learn about retirement planning. Some people at the party, like Sharika Evans, still have a long way to go.
You know, in this day and age, when you're 27 in New York City, you're thinking about like going out and events and clubbing and sex in the city kind of mode. You don't really think about like, where will I be at 40s?
But that's okay with the party's hosts, James Perkins and Khalid Jones. They've started an investment advisory and a mutual fund, especially for people like Evans. They're calling themselves Thrasher, and they've been talking the business up, where else, on YouTube.
One of the biggest stories in today's financial news is Foxy Brown.
Thrasher's using a mix of brash advertising, think hot pink business cards, and low-key investor education to help woo clients. James Perkins is founder and CEO.
They're early in their investment lives. And then the other thing you have to remember is, you know, we're talking about people that spend $300 for a pair of jeans. You know, we need to reallocate some of this capital to a place that's going to guarantee a little bit more longer-term happiness.
The company's mutual fund, Gendex, has plenty of trendy fashion stocks like H&M and Uniqlo, though the cool names share space with more state earners like Chevron and B of A. Chief Operating Officer Khalid Jones says they've set the investing limit low to encourage people who don't have a lot of money to join in.
People can come into the fund of any age at $100 and as little as $50 a month.
Perkins and Jones are both in their late 20s, so they should be able to relate to their own target audience. Of course, theirs isn't the only fund out there for people who don't have a lot to invest. Adam Bold, founder of the Mutual Fund Store, says there are plenty.
The reality is, whether you're in Generation X or Y, what you need are funds that are going to do better than most of the other funds that are out there.
Both Perkins and Jones have financial experience, including creating a hedge fund. They started accepting investors for the Thrasher Gendex Fund in October, so it's probably still too soon to see if hipness will translate into richness. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Hillary Clinton had a suggestion for the mortgage crisis this week. Bring in the likes of former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin and old Fed Chief Alan Greenspan. Let them take a shot at making things better. Of course, luminaries like Mr. Greenspan are favorite targets of the naysayers. But commentator Will Wilkinson says Monday morning quarterbacks miss the real game.
What we all really want to know about the economy is, who's to blame? Many people point the finger at former Fed Chief Alan Greenspan, the maestro himself. He kept interest rates low and encouraged techniques to make mortgages accessible to more people. By doing so, the argument goes, Greenspan practically blew the housing bubble with his own breath and should have seen it coming. One financial analyst has created a blog devoted exclusively to blaming Greenspan. It's called The Mess That Greenspan Made. But Monday morning quarterbacking is a bit too easy, isn't it? If Greenspan really should have seen it all coming, shouldn't Wall Street have seen it coming too? But instead of getting rich from their foresight, they got crushed under their collateralized debt obligations. Meanwhile, Greenspan's successor, Ben Bernanke, has slashed interest rates to stave off recession. He's extended massive lines of Fed credit to prop up major banking houses. One would like to see sound, time-worn principles of central bank management here, but it looks like a free-form jazz odyssey to me. Which is to say, it's Sunday now, too early to tell if Bernanke's a genius or a fool, but the Monday morning quarterbacks are already warming up their typing fingers. Maybe Bernanke's easy monetary policy delays rather than accelerates the economy's readjustment. Maybe the Fed's Wall Street rescue encourages the idea that no risk is too big and sets us up for the next disaster. The problem here isn't that the guy in charge isn't smart enough. The problem is that there's a guy in charge at all. We've put a central planner at the beating heart of our market system, but we've known for decades that central planners rarely have the information they need or the incentive to use it correctly. If it all goes wrong for Bernanke, just remember, the problem isn't the quarterback. It's the rules of the game.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute.
Fans of the 2006 documentary Who Killed the Electric Car may be interested in deliberations in Sacramento today. Electric vehicle activists, including former CIA Director James Woolsey, are coming together. They'll urge California regulators to revive the state's once groundbreaking zero-emissions vehicle program. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
At one time, California had the toughest electric vehicle mandate in the country. It wanted 10% EVs by 2003. But the state backed away from its aggressive demands under pressure from the auto industry. The film Who Killed the Electric Car blamed the California Air Resources Board, in part, for the car's demise. Tomorrow, that same state board, known as CARB, will update what's left of California's zero emissions program. Chelsea Sexton is an activist featured in the 2006 documentary.
And I would love to see CARB step up and decide to lead this again. We led once, we kind of gave it away, and we could certainly take it back.
Few, however, expect California to reinstate its original electric vehicle mandate. In fact, CARB staff is recommending a stronger focus on hybrids and other alternative vehicles. That may cost them the good guy role in a planned sequel to the 2006 film. Working title, Who Saved the Electric Car? I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Happy Wednesday. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.